Hey, it's the Escape from Plan A podcast again, and it's been a while, Jess. Jess, how's it going? It's been ages.
It's been busy. Yeah, it has been a long time, but I don't know. It's been good. Like, it's been a real kind of like growth summer for me. So that was, and part of that was just kind of like, just I just kind of needed to like withdraw from like, quote, the internet for a while. So like, I haven't been tweeting. Mm-hmm. I haven't really been checking in on like the chats or anything.
I've noticed. So. I figured that was a good thing. I was like, so I didn't bother you. I was just like, all right, I'll hear from you when I hear from you. And then I heard from you. So I was like, hey, you want
to? Yeah, it's kind of different. Like, it wasn't like an intentional thing. Like, oh, I need like a cleanse, or, you know, I need to detox from this. It was just more like just.
You have some other shit going on.
I just didn't have anything to, like, it was kind of weird. Like, I think we were talking a couple of months ago. Like, I think we were all kind of feeling it. Like, we just, remember when you were talking, like, you just didn't really have much to say? Like,
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, it turned out not to be true.
I could tell. I could tell. You've been a chatty Kathy past couple of months. But I mean, that's good, true. Right? But like, I felt that too. Like, I just, like, if I'm thinking about a thing, it was all confused and like muddled. I wasn't really getting clarity, just kind of making myself mad for no reason without really even being able to get to it. So like, this was kind of like just kind of clearing some clogged neural pathways maybe or something. So
nice. Well, you sound good.
Yeah, thank you.
Sound like, because a lot of times in the past, like, when things were really shitty, you know, like when we were always potting about, you know, anti-Asian violence, which is still a huge problem, but you know, it's there. You sounded, and we all sounded, I think, kind of like just like discombobulated, and you know, like there was this sound of just like maybe like a little bit of resignation, but I don't hear that anymore.
You know what? I was thinking of that too. You know, you and the guys doing the America Watcher series. That's actually
with Carl and John.
Yeah, it's less less just like more like front brain thinking on this sort of thing.
Yes. Yeah.
Maybe this is a process we all have to kind of go. We all have to go. Like, I think you need to feel this thing, right? And that's something that's before like. Reason, basically, you have to be able to feel this at a human level, and that's kind of like an animal base instinct level. And I think just time and a little bit of like mental discipline is what you need to like progress through that, not get over it, but like package it up into a thing that an individual human can deal with and make sense of and process and you know, figure out your place in them without like retreating into denial or hand waving as like it's all gonna be okay or whatever. So I don't think there's a shortcut to it, but so I feel like we just did that process in public with each other.
I think, you know, and this is one of the things I noticed about doing that America Watcher series with Carl and John, which is like, we had Jody Evans from Code Pink come on, and we had Tim Shorrock come on, and these are people in their 70s. And I was like, you know, and I told Jody this, who's awesome, by the way. I was like, you're like a mentor. I've rarely ever said that, because it's so rare for me to find someone who's like older and more experienced, but who I understand, like, I kind of feel shares similar values, like is like see things fundamentally the way like I see things and my friends like you would see things or John or Carl would see things. You know, every time I think about people that are older than me, I feel like a lot of them are just very different. You know, they just have very different views of the world that I find kind of outdated. You know, and so it was just really good to get in touch with someone who's like significantly more experienced. And that's not just a euphemism for older. I mean, someone who's like devoted her life to doing some sort of, you know, activism or organizing or, you know, writing, whatever it is. Not to say that that's what I do, but I'm just saying that someone who just took their, you know, their ideas very seriously. You know, how often do you come across that these days?
It's very rare, you know, especially, I mean? Someone in that age bracket. I know exactly what you mean. Like, so, like, it's an older cohort. So these are the people that didn't grow up with the internet. Probably a significant number of them aren't interested in being on the internet at all. So mm-hmm. there's, like, just that factor, right? So even if they are cool, they're just, we just don't know them. We just don't know who they are, where they're, you know, what's going on. A subset of the loud ones are just on Facebook talking about QAnon or, you know, Bidenomics, either pro or, like you said, like, just kind of out, not in touch with, I think, where things are, I think.
They're not free thinking, you know what I mean?
They're not.
Like, I don't even have to necessarily agree with you, but just be free thinking. You know, and one thing that I felt, actually, this made me feel really good, was I was starting to, or we were starting to be like, okay, well, because we were talking just about, like, how horrendously, like, belligerent our leaders are and how they want to start, they just want to keep starting wars. Mm-hmm. And it's really depressing, you know, and I was just like, you know, what the fuck? I mean, what are we supposed to do about this? It seems like there's really no democratic process to stop this because this is all foreign policy and it's not, you know, hemmed in by actual, you know, electoral calculations. They don't, you know, it's all, you know, commander in chief type stuff. Mm-hmm. And she just goes, just do what you're doing. There's nothing else. Like, just do, like, this space, you guys, like, trying to corral people into one space to get the message out or to what, just do that. And I was like, okay, well, I mean, if someone might, someone appear, I mean, like, to be honest, like, you're a peer, John's a peer, Carl's a peer. If they say that to me, if you said that to me, I would value it, but I wouldn't totally trust it because we're peers, right? It would feel like we're just sort of like
we're on the same boat.
Yeah, we're talking each other up, you know. But to hear it from someone who's been doing it for a while,
they're in a different boat. That's closer to where we want to be than we are, and they're calling back and saying, no, you're on the right path. But if we're all stuck in the same boat and we're all using the same equipment, it's a little hard to be like, no, you definitely know what you're doing here, as opposed to me. Yeah, no, I get it completely.
So that was very nice to hear someone mm-hmm. because, I think there's just like a real lack of I wouldn't even call it leadership, but more like mentorship for people who when they hit our age, you know, I know you're younger than me, but you know, like at this point, we're all adults, right? We're just grown ass adults. And
there's a steep drop. I think like millennials, so people born roughly like in the early to mid 80s are the first ones to have like spent all of their formative years on the internet, right?
Mm-hmm.
So like we're probably going to be on the internet in our 70s, but the people who are 70 now didn't do that. And I can already see it now, like among my friends, right, who are all like deep into their 30s and 40s now, there's a steep drop off. Like as soon as like that mortgage comes through, that kid that you get married, you have kids, they just completely vanish from like the public sphere, basically. So it's a little weird that our most dominant like public square, I'm not just talking about Twitter, but I'm talking like the internet at large, is populated by people who there's a self-selection to who is showing up on our screens. It's a real bummer because I like the boomers that are on the internet or that make the news. They're the worst kind.
Yeah, they I really think that. Are. Yeah, I think the real important message for me was to hear just like, yeah, you know, don't give up the freedom of thought, right? Like, don't just realize that this whole thing is futile and just fall in line and become, you know, let a little bit of that cynicism creep in, because it's probably just better for you. And part of me was just like, wow, she's like in her 70s. She sounds like a mm-hmm. young woman, frankly. Like she sounded really young, you know? And I was mm-hmm. like, you know, it's not the quality of her voice, though it was that too. It was just more the way she was talking was like, you know, there was a lot of energy in it. And I was like, yes, that's what I want. I don't want to be old and cynical.
Yeah,
absolutely not. I just want to remain, you know, free in my thoughts, you know, all the way through. Like, I don't want to let that old resentment come in, you know, like that old cynical resentment that you see in some grown people where I'm like, how did, you know, I don't want to be like that.
See, and I think like that tendency, I think it's actually really bad because of the boomers that I know, talk to, like, I think I know more like boomers that I'm not actually related to because as a function of like having had a dog, and I used to go to the dog park a lot. And so who shows up at a dog park, right? It's going to be like significantly older people.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. If you have like a young family or something, you're not like, and I was like, my dog was so active as a puppy. Like I would be spending like 2 hours a day at the dog park. And just happened to like, and I was working I had my own company, so I could kind of make my own hours. So
God, that's nice. How
it
happens.
It is. That it is
like,
really
that
nice.
That sounds like a great life.
Yeah. Yeah. So I happened to know a couple, like several, like boomers, right? Mm. Where am I going with this? Oh yeah. That tendency to cut that cynicism. I think that's it's not just a thing in itself. I think it compounds over time. Like if you have that little instinct, like say in your 20s or 30s, if you don't correct that, by the time you're in your 60s and 70s, this turns into a kind of like paranoia.
Yeah.
Like a deep, right. Like it goes beyond cynicism. It turns into like an active, like fear-based, like fear and anger and paranoia kind of bundled into one.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what passes for like, quote, a political sentiment. There.
Mm,
yeah. So this is the kind of boomer that'll look at you, look at like me when I'm talking about, you know, what's going on in my life and how things are going in the society that I'm in. And they'll look at me and tell me that I have no idea what I'm talking about. They know how the world works if I'm just wrong in some sense.
There's no point in trying. You're stupid.
There's no point in trying. They'll tell you contradictory things like, dear friend of mine, I love her to death, but you know, she's this classic boomer. Like she criticized me for a long time saying like, I work too much. You know, I'm a workaholic, you know, millennials don't know how to enjoy life. You know, we're just too obsessed with money or working. And then she'll read a thing from the New York Times and be like, why are you millennials so lazy? You're like, you just said contradictory things there, lady,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And then as soon as the conversation turns political, you see exactly how this template works, and it works best on these people here. So you have people completely cheering on like an expansion of the military, you know, everything that they're doing in Ukraine or China's bad or something. It's not even, it doesn't even have to be like an explicit, it's really something else to take a step back and actually see how this propaganda machine works and who it works the best on. And it's people who have had that kind of like cynicism, that this kind of false perception that they actually know how the world works and actually the world revolves entirely around their needs, and having lived in a world that was very well suited to their needs for a very long time. And then apply that to today and say that way of life is under threat. These are the people who are threatening it. And you can get them to do anything, agree to anything.
Mm. To become reactionaries in a way.
Basically, yeah. But again, you know, very under a very liberal front, right? Saying like, no, what we're doing in Ukraine is absolutely not a neo-colonial venture. That's absolutely gutting. Just absolutely raping this country for our own political ends. We're actually their friends. We're considering Ukraine allies here. Like, I don't know about you. I don't. If my friend dropped depleted uranium on my house, I'm gonna have a hard time believing they're my friend.
Oh God, I saw that exchange with the State Department spokesperson. It was crazy.
Well, the CDC said it's not. Yeah,
The CDC. Jesus Christ. I mean, we actually have like a lot. We know what it did in Iraq. You know, we have, you know, the record's clear in this. As if the CDC has any fucking credibility left. And then the IAEA, which they cited the IAEA as signing off on depleted uranium. I'm like, oh, the same group that signed off on having the water that passed directly over melted nuclear fuel rods get just dumped back into the ocean. That IAEA, you think the world is ready, is willing to just like take the word of these international organizations after COVID? Fuck no. I mean, agree or not, I'm just saying, like, read the tea leaves. You know what I mean?
Yeah, there's what it is, and then there's how people
read the room.
If people trust them, and the answer to the second is a fuck no. And that is a real problem that they are not willing to address.
But well, let's, you know, let's corral this in the direction, I think.
We got way afield.
No, actually, I don't think we are. I'm saying this because I think we're at a, this is actually relevant. I think it might be a segue. I don't know.
Okay. Interesting.
Because I think that part of this, and I think this is a general thing I've been noticing in people, is that you know what this uncaused fallacy is, obviously. I think that there
painfully.
Is
painfully.
Yeah, I think there's a sunk cost fallacy to like life, meaning like our entire life when we get older, and maybe not even when we get older. Maybe this applies even when you're young, but you've committed to or you're committed to a certain life that we instinctively become rather defensive of that life and of the ideas behind that life and the choices. We tend to, I think, defend our choices even when we think maybe they're not great. Like maybe we're not that happy with our lives or our situation. But I think a lot of people, there's a sunk cost fallacy where I see people erecting these psychological defense mechanisms to remain convinced that despite them being unhappy in their current situation, this is still the best possible situation. You know, I feel like all of the reason I think that's tied to what we're talking about just then is like, I think America itself as like, you know, as like a country, we're kind of doing that. Like I see this commitment to like, we both understand that our situation is shit. But when we see that situation, when we see that there's any notion of like a better alternative out in the world, we immediately attack it as being a lie or, you know, not the full truth or, you know, whatever. And that there's no way to be better than we are now. Do you know what I'm talking about? I feel like that's just rampant now.
Yeah, I can see that. But I think those are the foot soldiers. The most charitable read, you know, from people with the broad, you know, across the broad spectrum of people that I know is the sense that it's things are bad. They are not likely to get worse. I mean, they're not likely to get better. And it's not a straight up denial that, you know, that China's actually a developed country or that Europe has better infrastructure.
That is everywhere. I mean, what you just said there is everywhere in the media where, you know, they're constantly painting. And it's not just China, but I mean, the whole world that is trying to go a different way. Immediately, they get painted as dangerous and full of lies and authoritarian. And you can't trust anything that they say.
I don't doubt that that's happening. I also think that their power to keep the people thinking that way is diminishing.
I think people in America, okay, this might depend on who we're talking to or who we're sampling, but I think that I find that Americans by and large are believing that story, and we are turning away from the rest of the world and we are stewing in our own misery and we protect ourselves by denying that we don't have to do this. We're basically saying like this is the inevitable like fate. Like this is the best possible world is this shitty one that we're in. And to the extent that things are better overseas, they're all just lying because it's even shittier over there. It's this very, very doom loop type thinking where it's like we both acknowledge that things are bad here. And refuse to acknowledge that it could be actually better if we just made different choices. You know, that's what I see. I don't see people really holding out
hope. Are you talking about
like
people on Twitter or?
I'm saying people in real life, people on Twitter who are real people. Okay. I'm saying people in the media. I'm saying everyone. Like this is a general thing that's going on in America from my perspective, which is that, you know, we don't really want to be open to any alternatives in the world. Like, it's just us. And, you know, whatever happens is the best thing that could happen, which is means that we're turning into very cynical people, because if we're the best thing that happens and it sucks, we're entering into like a world, into a, like a culture where we just sort of think the world sucks. We're just a cynical, depressing culture, you know?
I don't know about that. See, I think there is this big split. I 100% agree with you. This is how the media operates. This is how the media would like us to be. This is how the powers that be want us to think. I also don't think that it's as common a mindset as it seems, is all I'm saying.
Oh, no. I think this is absolutely corroborated in people I know. Like, real life. Yeah.
Okay, it's not corroborated in people that I know. I'll just report on what I can see then, right? Because mm-hmm. I can't do anything. I don't have like numbers or anything. Of the people that I know or talk or am acquainted with or talk to or whatever, it seems like people are just running a very savvy like pro con list, like a little min max equation that's constantly with variables constantly running their head. And of the ones that, you know, and there are a few who are like, you know, fuck this equation is completely flipped for me. There's no, it's more value. It's more optimal for me to just fuck off and just go somewhere else than to stay here. I know people like that.
Yeah, but that's power not, to them. That's not helpful at all. You know,
hold on.
Yeah.
And I think of the people that, you know, have made that choice, and we're all making that choice, right? You and me and everybody else, you know, like you and me, at least right here, right? Like we can see how bad things are getting. We can kind of guess and kind of make a mental model of what we see outside the United States. Yet we have both chosen to remain here, at least for the time being. And I haven't made any plans to leave or anything. It doesn't sound like you have. It means that on balance, the life you have here is actually better than the life you can envision for yourself elsewhere.
No.
Really?
No. Yeah.
What's keeping you here then?
I'll tell you, the only reason I'm here is one, I have people here that I care about and I gotta be around. Mm-hmm. And two, just based on my career path, mm-hmm. like I can only max out my earning here in the United States.
That's still a balance. Like, okay, if the camps opened up tomorrow, right, and we have like 8 hours to leave, right? Do you think Asian Americans would stay?
Yeah.
You think there'd be Asian Americans who would still stay, yeah, knowing that most would internment's stay on the horizon?
Yep, it's already happening. Okay. So,
I don't think
fewer are coming, but I don't think people are like, you know, fleeing.
Big picture,
the country.
I think it's still an individual level decision.
The camps are already here, by the way. Like, once you say stuff like Chinese can't own property or whatever, first of all, they never came for all Asians. They only came for Japanese. Mm-hmm. This time they're coming for Chinese. So that's the thing, is like most people, the Chinese during the Japanese internment weren't particularly worried. Okay. And I don't think that, you know, people who aren't Chinese nationals, which is what this law targets, are also going to be particularly worried. I mean, they've never come after Asians as a whole.
I mean, my basic point is that there is absolutely a point where shit gets so bad here that your consideration, your primary consideration is not your earnings potential. It's to get the fuck out.
Yeah, but I don't see how that's just like deeply black-pilled thinking about America, where it's like, are you willing to flee the country? And I'm like, Okay, fine. I mean, I think about that all the time. Is like, how long will I actually stay in America? Because I don't really believe that America's near term future is going to be good. I feel maybe in the long term it might be decent actually, but we're gonna have to go through some very painful.
There's a nation level restructuring coming up, and it's not gonna be pretty.
It's gonna fall apart.
So I think most people are kind of black-pilled on this. So yes, to the extent that they're like saying I don't see a lot of people sincerely believing that the world outside is just truly shit. I see a lot of people angry that we are not living up to our own promises.
Asians are more open to that, but I don't think most Americans still think that we're living in the best possible world. It's just a terrible world. So thus the universe is terrible. you know.
I don't know about that. Like every time, I mean, there's definitely a race component to it, right? Like something.
We're dying of despair. We're literally dying of despair.
But we wouldn't be. Why would we be dying of despair if we actually truly thought that we are living in the best possible option?
No.
In a sea of worse options.
No. That's exactly what kills you, because what happens is that if you go by the assumption that this is the best possible world, then there's no fucking hope. Because this is as good as it gets, right? That's the problem with that thinking, is that you shut yourself off to any notion that, hey, actually, the problem might just be us. The problem might just be like the way we're doing things. Like we could just change. We have power over the situation because there is no law that says that whatever we are is the best possible thing, you know, but they believe in that. They believe in the American exceptionalism, and you live by that. And then you also die by that, because when things go wrong, you know, if you believe in the inherent exceptionalism of America and everything we stand for and do, then it just completely saps you of any hope and energy when things go bad. That's my theory about the sunk cost fallacy.
Okay.
Is that we're so invested in our own rightness and greatness that when things are wrong, like, we just keep doubling down on all the mistakes. You know what I mean?
Well, who's the we? Because I see plenty of people.
Collectively.
Like, you're talking about, like, the powers that like, the
I'm
government?
I'm talking about us rich. As a collective. No, I'm talking about Americans as a collective. As a collective.
I don't think America can be properly discussed as a collective.
I think it can be if we talk about the loss of faith. We can say about a collective loss of faith and a collective loss of engagement. You know,
okay.
Is there a collective project, a collective, you know, no, there isn't. There's a collective loss that I think there's a collective aspect to that. That's the thing that I think is most worrying me these days, is that there is a collective loss of energy and people from everyone from the, you know, they're saying like retail workers are quitting in mass. Well, white collar workers were quitting in mass to the extent they could afford to. And even the ones who are, like, they won't, you know, even at my workplace and stuff, like, people just are checked out and they don't, you know, they're not, there's a staleness in the air. There's a staleness. It's a collective staleness because there isn't like a collective project for us to buy into anymore.
I see it as a pause, like hold. Everyone is holding their breath, because I don't think anybody who is actually taking a good look at just not even big picture, but their own life circumstances. I don't think there's anybody who really believes that things are going well, or that the line is going to go up in a positive direction anytime soon for themselves. I think it's a bracing for impact.
Well,
I see a lot of people
if
like
bracing for impact. That I think that's a good idea, because I think there is going to be an impact.
I think there is. I mean, mm-hmm. this pervasive sense that shit is weird. It's fucked up. It's not fair. And, you know, like, this cannot possibly go on for much longer.
Yeah,
it can't go on. I mean, like, the Keynesian rule?
This is getting really depressing.
Well, I'm trying to see. I'm actually trying to drag it back, because I don't think it's
to what.
I'm not that depressed by it. Like, if we're talking about the soul of America or something, I'm like, I'm not actually that depressed about it.
Well,
because I think on the whole, I think shit has gotten so bad that everyone at almost every level of society, remember we talked about this quite a bit. We did a lot of talking about the next nine, right? That class, mm-hmm. that particular class that we both are a part of, and which is the one getting squeezed the hardest.
Yeah, they're going to get fucked. We're going to get fucked. Yep.
Yeah, this is how retarded it's going to get. When that class gets screwed, it's game over. These are the henchmen, the enforcers, the buffer, the propagandists, you know. This is the muscle for the power structure.
Well,
that
that's
exists.
The sad part is they're going to get fucked. We're going to get fucked. But it's just going to make us try harder.
This is the age of psychopaths. I understand what you're saying. Like, there's going to be the psycho model minorities, basically, because mm-hmm. the next nine, the
professional
the model minority shit is going to kick in hard.
PMC culture is going to get more intense and just worse.
Yes, it will. You know, and it will reward psychopaths for a little while. But on the whole, if that class gets screwed, like, for one thing, a big part of the consumer class, and we are a consumer economy, falls completely out if this class gets pressed much harder.
Yeah, but here's the thing. I'm convinced that they don't care.
Well, who's they now? Because
the Federal Reserve. And okay, the people who pull the levers. They are
They cannot care.
They're going to cause an economic crisis, which they're doing. They're in real time, in order to put the thumbscrews to us.
They can care. They cannot care. That's their business. I'm talking about what's going to happen. People have already completely lost trust in the establishment here, right?
Yeah, and nobody trusts. They're going to try to fix that through pain.
Okay. Well, is pain going to make people trust them more?
No, it's going to make people more desperate and willing to comply.
Well, we'll see how that works out. That's their hope.
It can go one of two ways.
History has not typically been in favor of that approach.
The history that they're looking at is 1978 to 1982.
Well, you know, that history goes a little bit further back than that.
No, I know. I don't think they're going to work, but I think that's what they're looking at.
Sure,
If
we're talking about some collective perspective here, I think people are waiting for that moment, that tipping point moment. And they're doing their best to make sure that they are as protected as possible, that their kids are going to be as protected as possible in that. But I don't think anyone is actually investing themselves into a collective, broader vision that moment.
Bottom line is, if you have the ability to look outside the United States for the future, I would seriously consider doing that.
I mean, that's what I see. It's people opting out in ways that are self-protective and in ways that protect themselves and their families. Like, all the propaganda is geared towards pulling people back in. And that means that people are en masse opting out in the ways that actually hurt.
Yeah.
Maybe it's not enough to change anything yet, but that ball has started rolling and it's not going to stop.
Look, it's a bleak future in America. I don't really think that there's much. I mean, it could. I guess what I'm saying is, we never know for sure. If things could get better very quickly, you know, things could stay the same for a long time. But I think there's also like a very high or significant, at least, probability that we're going to go off a cliff. And there's a lot of data and facts on the ground that are easily observable to suggest that the chances for that are probably bigger than we've seen in the past.
Uh-huh.
And so I think the rational idea here is to prepare for the worst and hope for the best, right? And so by preparing for the worst, I am personally thinking to myself that, number one, the way that the professional managerial class earns money and the amount of money that they earn is not going to continue indefinitely.
Yes.
And I'm already seeing that a lot of people that were earning, you know, mid six figures in, you know, these very bubbly sectors like real estate and technology, a lot of them are having their life plans derailed, and they don't know it yet. But it's likely like a permanent derailment. They're not ever going to find another job like that.
Yes.
And so my thinking is, in America, the situation now is it's going to be a lot of the PMC. Like, I think PMC needs to hold on as tight as they can for the remaining few years and pick whatever fruit they can get to and save it. And do not engage in reckless spending and prepare yourself for a protracted era. I don't know how long.
I see it as war. Mm-hmm. War metaphors make the most sense to me. Maybe that's hyperbolic. I'm not saying I'm actually comparing this to boots on the ground, actual warfare, but the basic sentiment is the same. It's our livelihoods, our way of life, you know, our ability to take care of ourselves and our families that is directly under attack. We're being squeezed hard So it's a protracted fight against, and I think the part of the propaganda has been very effective, is to get us to sympathize with our employers, with the power structure, with the way things are, with the understanding, with the kind of hope, the carrot that's dangling in front of us is, if you work hard enough, if you sell your soul to us hard enough, we'll let you enjoy some of the fruits of that labor. That is turning into more and more. That was always kind of a lie, but it was okay. Like, you could put food on the table, you could take a vacation every year, you could buy a new car. So fine, you'll put up with it. As that equation starts tilting further and further away from our, you know, our sense of self-preservation and prosperity, that's, you know, the propaganda is only going to work for so long. So
I just don't think the PMC matter as much as we think they do. I think that, you know, they'll get squeezed or replaced or thrown out. It doesn't make a damn bit of difference.
See, you are very, I don't know about that.
No, I don't think they do, because I think that, one, the ones who actually matter are not going to lose their jobs, right? The ones that actually are needed to keep this thing running are going to be fine. It's the large number of people who came into the game through bubble, through froth, through grift. That is going to come to an end. It's going to be very painful for a lot of people. But on the other hand, it's kind of like, well, what did you think was going to happen? You really thought that you were going to earn that much money doing nothing, you know? And the game was up, like I said, like, you know, I mean, when we saw these, you know, 27-year-olds bragging on TikTok all through the pandemic about how they were making $300,000 at Google doing nothing, sitting by the pool, what did they think was going to happen?
Well, here's a like thing. Okay, so you read Bullshit Jobs, right?
Yeah.
We talked quite a bit about that, right? Mm-hmm. I reread that recently.
Great, great book, yeah.
Yeah, amazing. What was I thinking? Okay, so Graeber kind of makes this, you know, envelope, back of the envelope calculation that maybe like 30, maybe even up to half of our quote service based economy, you know, our that productivity gain to GDP is completely bullshit, right? Jobs that didn't need to exist. Staffed with nihilistic people in despair because everybody knows their job. People tend to know that their job is bullshit, and stuff that can be eliminated from the work, from our collective workplace experience, with basically no impact to it. Right? Why do these jobs exist, for one thing? Right? Who do they serve? Why did this even come about? I think he didn't even go as far as he even could have. And part of that is, or maybe he didn't, I just don't remember it, but my basic point is the PMC may not matter in so much for their labor, but they are valuable for their consumption. So part of the bullshit jobification of the economy is partly because you needed people to have jobs to have some money to buy the products that the machine cranks out. This is partly why this push to this AI, this fear of AI has a very solid wall that it's going to have to contend with. It's not a perpetual oppression and extraction engine. Yeah, eventually you're going to be making shit. You're going to have to be making shit for robots to consume, because people aren't going to, there's nobody that can afford your product.
Yeah, we already hit that wall.
You're out of work. So, you know, there are some hard, you know, the machine is extractive and exploitative and oppressive, and it's terrible, and a lot of people suffer for it. But there are hard limits to that. That saying that the market can stay irrational far longer than you can stay solvent, I think that's attributed to Keynes, but I don't think that he actually originated that. That's kind of true, especially in an era where there's such high concentration.
But what is the point of this analysis? Are we trying to say that there's something salvageable here, or like, you know, I mean,
I don't think people are. It's just to kind of push back some on your assessment of the, like, the collective spirit of America, so to speak, like this willingness to believe that that the United States, even of the people that kind of accept that the United States is not in a great place, that it's still the best option.
Correct.
I don't quite see it that way.
Well, I'm not saying you do. I'm saying that as collectively, that's how we think. And that, to me, is a... Here's what I'm saying. Is... Okay, we're not ever going to get onto the original topic. I think we should stay on this topic because it's quite interesting.
Okay.
And we'll save that for another time, which is this.
I forgot what that one was. What was it? What did you want to talk about?
Don't worry about it. I think we should invite John to talk about that one as well.
Okay.
Because it was really a comparison between the cultural assumptions behind Chinese diaspora who moved to Malaysia.
Oh, yeah. Versus... trying to synthesize two disparate identities, yes, into one cohesive. Yeah, that's, yeah, a good one.
Yeah. And I think that, yeah, it's too big a topic to get into on this pod, but we'll continue on this topic, because I think it's very interesting too, which is that what I'm saying is this might be a time to just be a little bit more selfish, frankly, and think, and shit, maybe this is not news to anyone. Maybe this is what most people think. Maybe this is just news to me. But it is time to be willing to, I think, just to sort of like look at the reality and say that your personal, you know, your personal commitments to the United States might become liabilities, like big liabilities in the very near term. And that it might be time to leave this place behind, you know, to the extent that you can. I don't know. It's hard to do that because the rest of the world doesn't really operate the way the United States does. It's a very different mentality.
Okay.
And the rest of the world is not becoming like America. It is, I think, rapidly getting wealthier and more powerful and more confident in itself. But it is not just reproducing America, but in a different place.
Yeah,
I think is tied to
the United States was a bubble, and we are slow. This is a slow, long, drawn out process of the United States being dragged back in with the rest of the world, operating on terms that more or less everybody else has to abide by.
Well, we're not really doing well in that regard because we're denying, you know, to the extent that we already are part of that world and have like some of the. We're actively trying to turn ourselves away from the rest of the world.
Sure. I didn't say it was going to be an easy or, you know, unified linear process.
And so
I
the mean, question is, as an American, is, and these are more like macro questions, not really like, hey, what am I supposed to do? Like, you know, I don't know. I don't know what you're supposed to do. But I'm just saying in terms of how I think, because I think I'm more top down when I think, is like, as America closes the door on the rest of the world, do I want to be in here or do I want to be out there? Because I find that the culture here and the mindset here is increasingly insane. It's not a sane mindset. It's really lost in its own past, and it's full of like weird. It's like a muttering fool, and. You know, you can come up with like an example of some friend you know or some people you know that aren't like that, and that's fine. But I'm just saying, as a collective, I mean, I think that's where the culture here is going. And maybe that turns around, and hopefully it does, but I don't see that happening per se. I think we're just going to become more mired in our own internal political fights and, you know, our own little world of struggles between factions here inside the United States that the rest of the world has no idea about or cares about. And we're just going to be the muttering fool and the idiot that, you know, is just racked with domestic strife. And the rest of the world is going to move on. And if you want to find, you know, sort of like a better, more vibrant culture, you're going to have to leave the United States. I don't really see that. You know, I think before it might have been like, oh, you know, I have to leave this Rust Belt and go to New York City, or I have to leave this shit town and go to Los Angeles or California. You know, but then look at New York, look at California. It's not exactly fucking rainbows and unicorns. You know, it's urban fucking hellscape too. And it's seemingly getting worse. And so I got to think that I'm starting to see the world as divided between sort of like this new world that is starting to find itself, and there's a new era of globalization going on. There's a new era of internationalism, but the United States doesn't want to be a part of it. And it's actively closing the doors on that. And the question is, do you want to be part of this world or that world? Is the big choice that I see over the next 5 to 10 years, 5 years.
I don't disagree with you on that.
Yeah.
Like the position that the United States had for most of our lives, and definitely, you know, the boomers, Gen Xers, you know, the post World War II era, that's a heady time in history mm-hmm. for the United States. Letting go of that is going to be hard.
That's amazing.
Not going to be. Yeah. That's what being on top of the entire fucking planet basically fell apart, and the United States was the only one standing, right? That's an insane position to be in.
That's why it's so sad, is because, like, especially like people like us, I think we actually do kind of really admire and are in quite sort of like awe of what the United States is. I've never been very like anti-American. You know, I'm just saying, like, look, if you really understood the true sort of like vibrancy of the United States, what it used to be. And I think as a 45-year-old, I did catch sort of the tail end of that. Just enough to see it go away.
Mm.
And just enough one to see it go away. And also just enough to get a sense of how great it was. Right. That, you know, if you don't know that, like, I guess what I'm saying is Americans who don't quite know that feeling may not have a real adequate understanding of what's being lost.
I think if you were around to be young, like a young adult, like the lowest edge of that is if you were like a young adult, like maybe in your late teens or in your 20s, through any point of the 90s, I think you would catch a sense of this. I was just starting. I just missed it.
Mm.
Right. But even I had a sense of that. Like, it's just like, I think 90s were like truly like America's high watermark. I mean, and this is like taking into account, like, yeah, I know the genocide, you know, colonialization, racism, all this chattel slavery, all of that is really nice. I'm just talking about just zooming way the F out, right? We're talking like 1945 to 1950. We're talking literally every other corner of the world was blown apart. There was like the old European powers were all leveled. Right. Asia was a mess. South America was a mess. Africa was a mess. And just there's this one country, this very, very young country that just basically it on the time scale of civilization came out of fucking nowhere. It's like the startup of countries. Right. Just came out of nowhere and just stayed on and was somehow on top. This country that was barely 200 years old at that point somehow conquered an entire fucking continent in that time period. And was the only remaining like country that was untouched
from
the wars of the night of the early, like the early 1900s.
Yeah, it's
untouched.
Old news. And it's old news now. It's old news because that era is over. We're in a totally different phase of history.
Mm-hmm.
And that energy is still in the world. It's just not here. Mm-hmm. And in fact, a lot of that energy is about getting out from under us because we've become very fucking evil.
Extremely.
Like, I'm sorry, but there's not really much sugarcoating like the fact that the United States is pretty much like the most evil force on the planet at this point. And I know that that's a highly politically charged thing to say or whatever. It's not edgy. It's just a plain fact. I mean, you just have to look at facts
instead of reading the opinion. If you just take the opinion of people who are affected by the United States. Right, there's the opinion of people in the United States, or people who benefit from this in the United States, and there's everybody else. If you take that position into account, then yeah, it's you can't argue with it. Well, the United States has been the single biggest bully of the rest of the planet, so a lot of their development has to be in opposition to the United States and the United States' interests.
Yeah, it's just really it's just very difficult as an fundamentally like. Someone I want to be an optimistic person, it's very difficult to live inside the cultural sphere of the United States and see what I see every day in the media, in other people, in the general loss of energy and commitment and values. And to see the kind of lies that are being spread in the media, the racism, and just the self-defeat, the politics of self-defeat, it saps, like, if you know the difference, like, if you knew what America was like in, like, say, like, the mid or late 1980s, or, you know, being an adult in the 90s or something, the 90s was starting to feel a little bit. The late 90s, it was starting to slip into this sort of, what is it called? Like a sort of existential, you know.
The Clinton years.
Ennui. Yeah, you know, like late 99 yeah. when Office Space was a big, you know, that kind of thing. That sort of like, mm-hmm. that sort of what is the point of all this shit kind of thing that was starting to take hold in the late 90s.
Mm-hmm.
But I think when you compare the energy of like when America really had sort of a national project going and people were not just obscenely cynical and, you know, whatever. I'm not saying the United States was necessarily a force for good, but I do think that we didn't like revel in being evil the way we do now and openly defend being evil the way we do now.
Mm-hmm.
That I don't know how. I don't know how you could live in the United States and not let it sort of poison you a little bit. That's how I feel. You know, unless you're just very
detached.
You either get detached or I think the better yet is I think you have to stay extremely engaged. And, mm-hmm. you know, I think being detached is itself a form of poisoning.
It depends on how and what, right? Like, so where I find the most vibrancy is like in the deep enclaves. Right. Like, I don't think you can take a step. I don't think it's to stare directly at the whole thing is kind of to lose your soul. But, you know, I mean,
what do you mean exactly by that deep enclave? Like, what is that? What's the difference? You
know, like, why I don't know, is the fastest. There? I don't know. I mean, I live in one. I grew up in one. In a sense, it always kind of felt like a little island. The boba libs will call it like the isolating effect of living in an ethno enclave, right? I see it as kind of protective. And honestly, you know, it feels way more vibrant to be there than elsewhere, right? There might be more money elsewhere. There might be more technically like jobs or whatever, but you know, that kind of like energized ennui, you know, this nihilism, this is just in the ether, and there's pockets where that you can kind of protect yourself from that. And I think that's kind of for someone who's maybe non-white or something, that's what the enclaves represent. Those are some of the fastest growing communities in California, for instance. Like, house prices are still relatively like lower, like interest rate, that's just everywhere, right? You're not gonna get away from that. But like, prices are fairly reasonable given, you know, given geography and locale, plenty of amenities, everything that I want to be by is right here and it's cheaper than elsewhere. Like, sign me the F up. Yeah. I don't know. I like, mean, it doesn't protect you from, you know, the, you know, macro economic or macro social trends or whatever. But if you're thinking as an individual, you just have to kind of min max your way through it. There is a kind of nihilism just saying like nothing can ever be improved. So, well, it justifies inaction.
I think it's this local min max thing that I'm trying to push against is that I feel like it's important for me to think about where the entire world is going. I don't know why, but because I think like that's going to, there's a door that's closing. You know, that's what I feel like. There's a door that's closing here and we're going to shut ourselves off. That. Well, we're going to shut ourselves off from the rest of the world. It's not going to be as easy for us to get our money in and out of the country.
Okay.
It's not going to be as easy to get ourselves in and out of the country.
Okay.
We're going to start the free flow of capital is going to stop. a lot of things that we took for granted in terms of mobility and the ability to place ourselves in the world is going to narrow. And so a lot of the things that we take for granted in terms of like our choice or decision making, like we need to accelerate that, because I think in the future we're going to have fewer, a lot fewer, not the same or more choices in terms of where we want to put ourselves and where we want to put our money.
I think that's all true. I'm just talking about in terms of the enclaves, like this perception that the, you know, the Americas are the best and there could not be any, this idea just simply does not exist where I live, probably where you live either. Right. Like we could,
it absolutely exists here. I mean, it's just in a different form, but I mean, you know, people came here, you mm-hmm. know, I mean, these are people who immigrated to the United States. They obviously came here for a reason, you know.
I mean, I see like people get super hyped for the latest like you know, like store or restaurant or something, a chef that comes in from the mainland or something, mainland China or Korea or whatever. There's admiration for, you know, the kind of businesses and, you know, cultural projects that they're able to bring here. I think there's a lot of respect for how far Asia specifically has come up in the past decade or so. So I don't really get the sense that anyone's thinking like, oh, you know, like,
yeah, because you live in a bubble, but I'm saying that is going against the grain of like what's going on in America.
I get it.
And you're saying, okay, well then dig in further and just get deeper into the bubble. And I'm like, well, the thing is that there's a bigger choice to be made, right? That's the thing. I mean, yeah, okay, I can move to the 626 or whatever and pretend like none of this is happening, but why would I do that? I'm saying that there is a larger choice to be made in my mind. Which is like, do you want to stay inside the United States or do you see your future outside of this place? Because this place is going a certain direction and I don't really see it changing.
Well, then that gets back to what I was saying at the very beginning, right? Like for me, I'm actually running. This is an equation that runs in my head. It's not too far from the surface either. Like constantly seeing where I'm at, seeing where things around me are at. Today it's, you know, like no, today it's still more optimal for me to be here than elsewhere. So I'm going to stay. That's the equation that's in my, I'm sure that's in most people's heads too.
Yeah, it's
honestly
in my head, But I think it's important to think in terms of short-term goal, medium-term goal, long-term goal.
Mm-hmm. And so, okay, well, then for you, what's talk me through it. Short-term, medium-term,
I don't see myself living my life out here in America anymore.
Okay.
It's sad because it's the only country I really know, and I love this place. Mm-hmm. But I don't see this as the right place to be for over the course of the next several decades.
You know, same, honestly. For right now, I kind of have to be here.
Yeah.
It'll be really hard to relocate and try to make money. I can make money here. I know how to do that. So I have to kind of be here for that. But like my mom went back to Korea over the summer. And one of the reasons she went back is to reapply for citizenship. And I'm very much cheering that on because if she gets it back, then I automatically get it back because I was a dual citizen for a while and I never actually filed the paperwork to rescind it. So my mom actually thinks that I might just be in the system. Like no one ever sent me papers saying like my citizenship's been revoked or anything. So we have this like kind of interesting paper bureaucracy tangle to navigate here. But I'm actively trying to get dual citizenship back.
To go back to Korea?
Yeah.
Or to get a career.
Why not? Yeah. Why not?
Well, yeah, I don't know. Well, I wouldn't go to Taiwan, that's for sure.
Mm, okay.
The problem with Taiwan is it has all the same problems as the fucking United States because the Taiwan is a vassal of the US and they've gone the way we've gone.
Mm,
and mm-hmm. they have all the same problems there. Their economy's shit. Real estate is out of control expensive and the people are they suffer from the same sort of thing that's going on here.
I mean, honestly, South Korea isn't far behind.
I know. South Korea's got really, you know, on those indicators, it's really bad, too.
Yeah. So, like, there's...
No, I wouldn't go back to Taiwan.
Like, I think there's still, like, of the people that are kind of black-pilled a little, like, new to taking the black pill, so to speak, it's like, oh, where's the perfect place to be? Like, sometimes you just have to accept that there is no such place.
No, this is not about perfect. It's not... Yeah. That's absolutely not what it's about.
It is about...
The world is being split, in my opinion... into two main factions, the mm-hmm. Western faction and the rest of the world. And there is a, it is, and in fact, it's a little bit deeper than that, because I feel like that same division actually exists within the West itself, right? And mm-hmm. that same division exists outside the West as well, where there's something going on where it's like some sort of, it's some sort of reaction against Western liberalism. And it's been building up for a long time, and it's coming to a crest.
And well, for one thing, no country that's country that's been under the aegis of the United States has had they're all kind of struggling now. Like even England, right?
England's a shithole.
England threw in with the United States. Let's face it, that's kind of that's
their country.
Kind of
their country is completely falling apart.
And so I mean,
Germany's falling apart.
It's yeah, the Germany controlled EU is falling apart. Spain, mm-hmm. Greece,
France is falling apart.
France, Africa
just kicked them out of Africa. The Africans just kicked them out of. They smelled weakness, mm-hmm. and they booted them out of Africa in Gabon yeah. and in Niger, in both places. At the same, they were like, and what are they going to do about it? Apparently, nothing.
They can't.
So this is, you know, this there's something going on. It is the defeat of the Western world, and mm-hmm. we are in total denial about it. In fact, we're just actively lying about it. But the more they lie about it, the more obvious it becomes. Do you really think like a confident West would be like engaging in this kind of shit? I don't think so.
Yeah. I think if the common denominator in what we're both saying is it's worth kind of shedding ideological lenses or biases. And this can be personal too. Like I think people can be very deeply invested in this. And this goes back to your sunk cost fallacy. It's worth it to take a dispassionate look at your circumstances and the circumstances of the greater world around you. I think it's not just like a moral duty. It's actually imperative for your survival in the current moment and beyond.
Yeah. I'm saying prepare your shit because things could go really, really fucking wrong. And by the time that happens, it might be too late to do anything about it. Uh-huh. Because you might not be allowed to move your capital out. You might not be able to relocate the way you can now.
Mm-hmm.
All right. There are, you know, we take for granted a lot of the freedoms that we have. The mobility of capital, for example. The mobility of people. The ability for us to travel around the world on our passport. You know, we take that for granted. And I'm like, look, it's already starting to go away. Like, there already are a lot more restrictions on the U.S. passport than there used to be.
Yeah,
and there's growing, and if you follow anything regarding finance, there is a growing amount of obstacles to moving your money around.
Yeah.
So you might find yourself stuck here.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the thing I'm grappling with is like, well, how quickly is that going to happen, and how do I get in front of it, or do I get in front of it, or do I just sort of resign myself and be like, okay, whatever happens to America happens to me.
I mean, a lot of people will not have a choice, right? Like movement of people or capital, like very few people, relatively speaking, even have a passport in the United States, and people are increasingly impoverished.
I'm not worried
right?
about that. So, I'm not saying all 350 million of us are going. I'm talking about me and you.
No, I know. Like, I'm talking about if about you, but everyone can kind of optimize their current situation. If you're able to make some smart investments, just put an emergency fund someplace where if you have to bounce, you can still access it, right? It's worth it to do that.
Yeah,
like plan on expanding exactly. beyond the United States, the USD, shit like that.
Yeah, it's almost like, you know what? Okay, I guess what I'm trying to say is...
Not saying Bitcoin. I'm also not saying Bitcoin. You know, shit like that. Everyone can, no matter where you are, you can maximize where you currently are.
What I'm trying to say is when things are on the up, a lot of times people lack the vision and the open-mindedness to see the potential, and they miss out, right? They miss out. I was telling friends in 2013, I was like, yo, NVIDIA, this company is going to be bigger than Intel, right? Mm-hmm. I was saying like, they found out this thing about how you can run AI algos on the GPUs and the... Facebook's going crazy for it. All the AI companies are going. This is 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And if I had really believed in what I was saying, and I put $50,000 into NVIDIA, that thing would be worth like $15 million right now. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
There's things where you have a sense, like you kind of can see where things are going, but you don't really believe it. Mm-hmm. So I didn't put $50,000 in.
Yeah.
Right. But it can go the other way too. There are times where you sense that things are going the other way. Things are starting to fall apart. And so the question is, okay, well, how convinced are you that this is real? Or is this just grumpy old man talk, but that you're not going to do anything about? You see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. That's the thing I'm contending with now, is like, there was a time when I saw things optimistically, but I didn't believe it enough. And I should have just parked my money in tech stocks, as an example. Mm-hmm. I didn't do it. But now, while everyone is trying to find the next NVIDIA or whatever, I'm like, wait, maybe the issue these days is different. Maybe we're in a short. What you should be looking for is the big short.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Maybe what you're looking for now is how if you think things are going in a wrong direction, like how convinced are you that that's a real risk rather than just, you know, just rhetoric? So
there's no right answer to that. That's going to be different for everybody too.
Well, of course.
I don't know. Are we switching? Do we have to switch to more like stock tips for the
Oh no, I don't care about stock tips. I'm just saying, I'm just saying, like, you know, start with this, because everybody I know is sort of like aware that things are going wrong. Mm-hmm. But even though they're saying that, I don't think that they're quite seeing how wrong it's going.
Are they still putting in their pre-orders for the next Teslas and shit?
Yeah, I mean, they're
the Rivians.
They're putting money into, you know, whatever. Yeah. Yes, Rivians and all this shit. And it's like, they're talking the talk, but they're not walking the walk.
Yeah. Okay. See, that's the number one thing for me, right? Like, if you want to talk about like big, short or medium or long term, anything, step one for me was I cut out on expenses.
Yeah.
I just don't do that anymore. Like mm-hmm. big extravagant purchases. No. So that's a thing that I think everyone could benefit from right away. Right, is really focusing on like not wasting the money that you do have. A lot of it is going to come down to money. We can talk ideology all we want, but nothing about like prepping for the future happens unless you have the means to carry it out. And for now, that means the dollar. So, I mean, that's just if I were to give advice and no one asked me for it, but the thing that I'm following is I'm certainly not spending like crazy.
Oh, for sure. I think you got to stack your money, and you know, it's exactly the time. And people are going to be trying to entice people to spend more and more. But I think the clear fucking thing to do right now is to stop spending. You know, unless you have to. But you know, I think you should absolutely be saving and investing.
Yeah. So. Yeah. So you
know what? That's always been true. So I don't know. You know what I mean? It just might be more true than now, but I feel like that's always been true. There was never a good time to waste your money.
Mm-hmm.
No,
it's true. But, you know, but yeah, more true than it was before. We're seeing them fucking with the dollar in open sight, right? Like the one thing that you would think that a capitalist power could not screw with, and they're doing it. Like this is how bad it's getting right now.
Mm-hmm.
So we're talking like stack. I'm not even saying that I believe in the dollar. Even it's just that for now, this is all I can do to prep for a little bit in the future. I don't know. I don't know what to say about that. Like, so long term, that's where I'm personally at. In the meantime, you know, I try to enjoy what I can. So that means, you know, like enjoying living in an enclave, enjoying, you know, doesn't have to be a joyless existence in the meantime.
Oh no, you know, the funny thing is I don't feel joyless at all, but I just do think that it's, you know,
Oh, I'm not saying you are. It's just
thinking about this shit to me is not a matter of joylessness or not joylessness. It is just a matter of like getting my head straight about what direction the future is taking, and it's a very serious question to me. Because mm-hmm. it's gonna dictate the quality and arc of the rest of your life. And yeah. Now is a time where you can still make choices. But I don't know whether in 5 years all those choices are still gonna be available to us. Mm-hmm. So the question is, what are your choices and should you which ones should you make? And I think but instead, I think what I was pointing out with the sunk cost fallacy is a lot of people are just kind of like, well, I just hope for the best. And I'm like, I don't know if hoping for the best is the right thing right now. I think looking at your choices and being open-minded about what choices are good and what choices are bad. I know this is very abstract, but you know, everyone's life is different. I'm just saying that sitting back passively right now is a sure way, I think, to get fucking wrecked. That's all I got to say, really.
Well, I think that hides a despair, because when you say, you know, this is, I don't think anybody truly believes that. It's that people feel trapped. They don't have a way to improve on it. So in that case, if that's the case, then
that's not true.
This is a psychologically protective mechanism.
I don't think that's true. I think everyone has a way to.
Yeah, I just said everyone can optimize their situation. I think the trap in feeling like it's that whole, like everything is fine, you know, or it'll be, or I'll just go down with the ship, is kind of, you got to get past that to some extent.
Yeah. Like
everyone can do something to protect themselves I've just been in more contact
with people who have been taking their own matters into their own hands and uprooting and leaving the United States, either permanently or, you know, or on a semi-permanent basis. Mm-hmm. And a lot of different types of people. I'm not just talking about people, you know, elite professionals relocating to like Hong Kong. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about people here that are like deciding to spend half the year in Mexico. And really taking, like, you know, easing up on the amount of time that they spend here, you know, grinding here in the United States. I'm seeing people who are moving to Southeast Asia, even though they're not Southeast Asian.
Yeah.
And saying, like, you know, it's just an easier life here and I like it here. There's always a lot of people just moving out.
That's accelerating. Yeah. Especially with work from home.
I don't know why
the tech industry. It's been accelerating big time. And a lot of those people that, you know, the digital nomads or whatever, a lot of them aren't going to come back, or they're very down on the United States because they have seen what it is like. And they've seen being in places that are actively trying to like cater to them. Like, this is the thing about living in California, like even being in quote, the tech industry, it is really hostile. California is making it very obvious that I am not actually all that welcoming. I have to fight to be here. There are places out there I know that are going to be far more willing to accommodate me and try to help me in achieving my goals, because me being there also helps them.
Yeah.
So this is kind of the arrogance of being on top. Like, everyone, California is just assuming that I'm willing to pay out the nose and jump through all the fucking hoops to be able to stay in California. Every day that goes by, that becomes less and less true.
More and more people are saying no to that.
Yeah.
No, I don't. Like I said, I don't personally see a lot of you all Californians leaving California.
No, I mean, I
know there's a lot of talk about that, but the Californians tend to stay in California despite all this shit. And that's why I think like things are getting so bad, because they kind of can count on you all to stay.
Yeah, like that's ultimately the ultimate power, right? But I mean, for one, California has experienced its first dip in population. Like, more people have left than have come in.
Yeah, I think that might be a blip.
Maybe. Who knows? I don't know.
Because I think the places they went to are even worse.
Who knows, right? That's just we just have the information we have. We do know that all the trends that caused that little exodus, none of them have eased up. So we'll
see. Texas is 115 degrees like every day, and Florida is literally full of Nazis.
It's a swamp. Yeah. Swampy Nazis. So
let's not say that there's exactly that many better alternatives than California.
I get it. At the same time, you know, if I'm looking for a house and I really regret not taking the plunge in like 2020, right? Like I was going to.
It's probably good that you didn't.
I don't know. I go back and forth on that. But
well, you wouldn't be able to. I mean, you'd be stuck with that house right now.
In the future. So, you know, and then like literally anywhere else, like if I just look anywhere outside of where, you know, my quote ideal place to live, it looks like buying. It looks like a joke. It looks like I'm playing with like Monopoly money. The numbers, the scale is just that different. For a lot of people, that's going to mean that like they're going to leave, or if not leave the state, at least move out. And that's what the rise of the new enclaves in LA and probably other places around the country, that like they're all pushing further out. They're further away from the city center. They're much cheaper. They're much more insular. They've got all the amenities. It's great for families. So those are the communities that have the highest growth, and they tend to be much cheaper than quote, you know, the most ideal place to live in the metropolitan cities.
Yeah. For me, they're not leaving the state, but they are moving away. For me, it's just like there's still an arbitrage going where, you know, you can still earn good money in the United States relative to the rest of the world. For whatever reason, that's what's going on. It's probably going to stay that way for at least a while. I don't think that's going to change per se that quickly. So the United States will remain a good place to earn money, but I don't think it's going to be a good place to invest money. I actually think that it's good to earn here, but it might be good to expatriate at least some of your money abroad.
Diversify. That's always been good advice.
Yeah, and I think what I'm looking at now is
hold on to as much of it as you can.
Well, I think what I'm thinking about now is like looking around the world and seeing like where arbitrage opportunities exist, where I seem to be able to get a lot for my money, mm-hmm. and go and really really consider going for it. Mm-hmm. You know, if that includes real estate or if that includes what I'm not particularly interested in financial assets. Like I've never been convinced that foreign stocks are where it's at, because I just don't think the rest of the world cares about stocks as much as we do. Mm-hmm. So I don't think that a lot of the appreciation is necessarily going to come through shares in corporations. I think a lot of it's going to be driven by harder real assets like real estate. Mm-hmm. And, funny enough, I think we're going to come upon like probably a global real estate slowdown, which only means, guess what? There might be even better opportunities to buy. So
that's already kind of happening. My mom was looking at that. Because the hike and the domestic turmoil in the markets and interest rates, that has also affected countries that are in the shadow
of
the
Korea.
United States. Yeah, so
Korean real estate's been crashing like crazy. Mm-hmm.
So she's been considering like putting more of her money there.
Yeah,
and then I might end
up. That's what the smart people do. Every time there's a fucking fire, they go running towards the fire with a bag full of cash. Mm-hmm. That's how people get rich.
So, I mean, and now it's just protective. Like, maybe I'll own a house in Korea before I own one here,
Exactly. exactly. Why not?
So I have to be kind of smart and not, like, ideologically committed. Like, it seems kind of weird.
Yes.
But, you got to do what you got to do.
That's my point. It's just, let's let go of assumptions that, we're stuck here. And start to see that, there's a whole world in play. And you may not necessarily want to stake your future here. And there's a lot of reasons, I think, to think that way right now. And while it may sound a little nuts to some, that's exactly when you want to start thinking about it. Because I think when you wait until it makes a lot of sense, guess what? It's too late. That's when mm-hmm. the price of NVIDIA has already gone through the roof. And, there's no point in buying it in anymore.
So being, clouded with, ideology, like paying too close attention to the news, basically, you're not... They're not up for your best interest here.
No, of course not.
Taking a dispassionate look at where things actually are.
Yes, but people will call you crazy. People will call you crazy for doing that, is my point. People will say that you're overreacting, people, whatever. And it's like, look, that's the same people who prevented me from putting $50,000 into fucking NVIDIA. Mm-hmm. actually, no one said that to me. But so that's not a good analogy. But that my point is that, yes, like no one is going to say that. I am saying it's a good idea, but I'm saying if you look out into the larger, everyone's going to tell you it's going to be fine. Everyone's going to tell you it's cyclical. Okay.
China's about to collapse.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Exactly. Ukraine is going to win.
Yeah.
The stock market's doing great. And so
unemployment number is really low. It means things are really good.
Yeah, that is what they want to tell you. That is not what you need to know for yourself. Like, only you know.
It's a fucking lie.
So just take a step back, like, be very dispassionate about where you stand, what you need to do. And I think people generally are very correct. They're very astute about where they stand and what they actually need and where they want to be in a handful of years.
I think most people are fucking idiots. I think that's,
I don't know.
I think that's how we got into this situation in the first place. I think people are still out there YOLOing with their credit cards. They're still doing that shit. And I don't know what the fuck they're thinking, but don't be one of them. I think it's opportunity. As long as there's idiots out there, just go against the herd, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, no, I totally disagree. I think there's so many fucking morons out there. And you can, it's in the data. I mean, they're still YOLOing on credit cards. Consumer spending is still at an all-time high. It's,
well,
I mean,
sure,
it's, now
I get
it's
that.
Finally turning down. But you know why? Because they're finally getting their credit cut off. That's the only reason. It's not because they're getting smarter.
I don't know if that's YOLO. Part of that's going to be YOLO. Sure, the Instagram people or whatnot. The lifestyle creep motherfuckers.
That's not a small segment of society anymore. There's a lot
it's
of
not
people now.
Sure, I'm just, my contention is still that I still feel like the bulk of that is going to be people who are I feel like that's part of that, at least a good part of that spike. I don't know about the majority, but a non-trivial proportion is people dealing with the hikes in cost of living.
Well, then why are they all buying fucking super expensive cars on lease? And, you know, why
no
are they going on
them.
Fucking why are, you know,
is that,
they,
the,
is
that
going on
the,
expensive vacations and cruises? Like, I know that a lot of that's come to an end, but why were they doing that just 1 year ago?
Is that the majority? I don't know.
That's a lot of people.
Sure, then those people, like, they probably shouldn't. That's not in their best interest, I think. So, I don't know.
Well, fuck. My point is, fuck them. If they're going to do that, let them do that, but I'm not going to join them.
Sure. Sure.
And there's a lot of these motherfuckers out there.
Yeah, and it's easy to get sucked into that. It takes a lot of
And you know, when things come... And when things fall apart, they're gonna employ that same appeal to just like, hey, you know, we're just regular middle class people trying to get by. And, you know, when things go wrong, that's what everyone says. And, you know, they're gonna dress themselves up as having, you know, I made all the right choice. No, you didn't. Yeah, I mean, we all know, like, everyone was fucking YOLOing, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And then when everything falls apart, they're going to claim that they were just, you know, they're innocent victims. And I'm like, no, you should have been stacking cash. You should have been saving for this day. You should have been going the other way.
Mm-hmm.
But you were going to hear a lot about how it's just the, you know, just the innocent middle class that got screwed by the wealthy and got screwed by Hollywood, by Wall Street again. And I'm like, no, I don't know if that's going to be a sufficient explanation this time. You know, because I think we've all had, you know, plenty of opportunity to learn from the past about, you know, excessive leverage, spending beyond our means, the importance of saving and all this stuff. And no one's fucking doing it. And when it goes wrong again, they're going to blame everyone but themselves.
Yeah, fair. I have no sympathy for people who pissed it away. That's for sure.
That's most of America.
I mean, we all know the cost of living is getting harder and harder and harder to make ends meet. So I don't know. I have no idea how to think about all of that. It's just, if you can just save as much as you can possible, I guess.
Save it and consider moving it to somewhere, you know, consider where to even, put it. Not just
they won't even, they won't even hold back from fucking with the dollar. So it's not even like, if you have a sufficient amount of dollars, you're necessarily safe. You need safeguards.
Yeah. All right. That's sufficiently, blackpilling and depressing. should we call it there?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I don't know what ground we covered, but
nothing.
Sure.
This was exactly the same conversation I had last time with Stephen. Why? Because it's why? Because this is what's on my mind. That's why.
Yeah.
The other thing I think is very interesting, but probably not fully baked yet as a topic. So probably why we weren't able to get to it. All right.
Let's get to it next time or something.
Sure.
All right.
Sounds good.
All right. We'll call it here. All right. Good talking as always. See ya.
Same. See ya.